Now, there's two lines of hieroglyphs. Now, the inner track has the classic figures, but the outer track is like the cartouche in the center. It's got writing unlike we've ever found before.
We're doing it for Kowalski! This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to FilmSack, episode 412, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. I'm Scott Johnson. Joining me today, Brian. He will ask you if he can borrow your newspaper after he takes it from you, Dunaway.
Drinking that coffee, too? Oh, hi.
Meanwhile, back at the Stargate. Whoa, incoming event horizon. Low bridge.
That was a close one. Almost took 2 inches off the top of my hippy-dippy hair. Uh-oh. Looks like it got you, O'Neill. Man, you can serve pancakes with a side of bacon on that flat top. Oh, hey, Kowalski, have you ever noticed Chevron 3 has a striking resemblance to the Wu-Tang Clan? I wonder if you Chevron 7 locked that thing if you would end up on Planet Killer Bees. Did I say that? Damn it, Kowalski. Come on, that's good stuff, you unobservant piece of crap. Fifth Avenue bars? I hope this planet is not too hot and sandy. I mean, I have chocolate and dust allergies to think of. Look, I think I see something. Is that a hairy desert llama camel or some kind of Skeksis? You know, like from The Dark Crystal. Man, I love that movie. All right. I'm going to need get off me. No need to shove. Chill, Kowalski. I'm going. Getting in the gate.
Kowalski. We're doing it for Kowalski.
Yeah. Damn it, Kowalski.
I love that actor, by the way. We'll talk about him later. Also with us, Randy, I think Fifth Avenue did product placement in this film. Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian.
Hi.
Great.
All right, listen up. Ooh. We're about to walk into this thing that we know literally nothing about, other than we sent Johnny Five in there, and apparently the other side didn't melt him, and it has unbelievably good intergalactic Wi-Fi. So, if you've got anything you want to say, you have to say it now. I'll go first. Now, I know you're wondering why we're taking this nerd here with us. You might not have noticed, but he has really good hair. Like, this is a once-in-a-generation scientist who goes to the hair salon every day by the looks of him. And you don't just leave a man like that on Earth when you're walking into sparkly goo. I should know. When I was suicidally depressed, I also had really good hair, and I went to the hair salon every day. And that's where I met him, and we fell in love, and now he goes everywhere with me. No one else is allowed to talk. Let's go.
Wow.
This really was a movie of a tale of two haircuts.
Yeah,
it really was.
A tale of two haircuts. Really, that's fantastic. Well, yeah. Speaking of one, a man who has no haircuts. Brian, yeah. He tastes like chicken Ibbot.
I would argue that I have the ultimate haircut.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, okay. All right. Can I start now, Brian?
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. He was talking.
Can I have your newspaper and can I begin?
Do your show. Do your thing. Sorry.
Can you just mute his microphone for a second?
No, I wish. Go ahead.
Okay. Hello, Star Maker Agency. Yes, this is Gary over at casting at MGM Studios. We're looking to cast a role in a new film called Stargate. Can you help us? Ah, great. Okay, so the director is looking for a leading man, a bookish scientist kind of guy. He needs to be really likable. Oh, you've got someone. Great. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I've seen Pretty in Pink. Oh, you're thinking Andrew McCarthy? Oh, no, the other one? Oh, John Cryer. Sure, yeah. No? Oh, no, you're talking about the snotty rich guy? Oh, no, definitely not him. Who else do you have? Oh, yeah. Yeah, less than zero. Yeah, I've seen that one, yeah. Oh, yeah, you're thinking Robert Downey Jr. Sure. Oh, no, not him? The other guy? You mean Andrew McCarthy? No, the snotty rich guy? No, forget it. No, definitely not him. Give me somebody else. Yes, okay. Yes, I've seen Mannequin. Right, the one with Kim Cattrall, right? Yes, oh, yes. Are you sure you're not thinking of Andrew McCarthy? Because I think he... No, no? The snotty rich guy? No, look, all right, you know what? I think I'm going to have to call someone else. I don't know who that guy is, but you better put him on the blacklist.
Ah, you went out. That was a long trip to get to the blacklist joke. That was good.
It was a long trip, but it involved three Andrew McCarthys.
Yeah, it was really good. Yep. Very strong. I liked it a lot.
Apparently, when you cast Andrew McCarthy in a film in the 80s, you need James Spader as the bad guy.
Yeah, right. That's your job, is to get James Spader all up in it. He's short, by the way. I got some revelations in this movie. I always thought James Spader was a tall guy. No, he's not. He's a little tiny man. We'll get into that and much more here on our investigation of the film Stargate. 1994, I saw it in Las Vegas, Nevada on a trip I took out there with a bunch of guys for a work thing. And I remember thinking the first 20 minutes was amazing and was leading to something really special. And then the last two thirds was terrible. Mm-hmm. And kind of blowing the whole opportunity here to make a cool, thought provoking, interesting take on it. What is really a pretty awesome idea. And at its core, And I hate to say it, but I still feel pretty bad about the last two thirds or so. But I think the start's really good, so I'm still kind of where I was at in 94 with the film Stargate. But let's talk about it. Roland Emmerich, famous for his disaster movies.
Mm-hmm. Always, it usually has really good ideas. Sometimes executes better than others.
Yeah, I think his idea here, while not awesomely executed, is one of my favorite sci-fi premises, and the shows that came later, SG-1, Atlantis, and so on, were some of my favorite TV sci-fi. I absolutely love those series to death. SG-1 in particular is right up there with TNG, Star Trek for me.
And I hear great things about those.
Yeah, those are very good.
I love SG-1, but if you ask me what I want to watch, I'm usually kind of leaning towards, right now anyway, Atlantis.
Atlantis is great.
I feel like maybe it's a little closer. Maybe that's the reason why it doesn't feel so dated or something. I don't know.
Yeah, no, and I think Atlantis holds up. There's some you know, equally cool ideas in there, and that cast was also good. Like, it was just it was good stuff. The one that I don't remember very much is the more kind of post Battlestar Galactica remake one that was called
more recent ones.
What was that called? Stargate Unknown or
It was I can't remember.
Whatever it was, it had a really cool cast, but it tried so hard.
Universe.
Yeah, they just tried so hard to be gritty BSG that I think they just overstretched on that, and it bummed me out, because actually the way the story was progressing was pretty good, and then it got canceled, and I was super bummed.
So, not having seen any of the Stargate post-movie TV shows, obviously it's a continuation of this, is it just, we found other ways that we can turn this magical dial and go to different places?
So it's not, it's not a continuation, so what they do is...
They copy Star Trek is what they do. So, you know, Star Trek said, okay, so what would happen if you had a star base that was in the middle of nowhere? Or what if you put a ship, out of the reach of the rest of the Federation? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where Atlantis goes. They reach too far, and they're stuck out there. And so that's what they kind of explore.
Well, Atlantis was like Discovery. What's the one? One where the lady captain,
Janeway. Get it.
Voyager. Geez. It's like Voyager, but the original SG-1 is Daniel Jackson, Dr. Jackson. It is Colonel O'Neill, except he's MacGyver in this or in the show.
Great picks for both of those characters too. I thought, because the characters play pretty good.
They're fantastic in the show. But they kind of just reset the thing. Like, it's not. Yeah. Daniel Jackson gets coaxed into the program again, and O'Neill isn't quite so injured in the show. He's funny and kind of loose.
MacGyvery,
yeah.
does he keep his MacGyver hair though? Like, he doesn't go to the Kurt Russell.
No, he keeps it short. Not, okay. not like Kurt Russell though. That was some amazing.
Yeah, there's no scene as I remember, and it's been a while since I've seen the pilot, but I don't think. Richard Dean Anderson or whatever his name is that it? Yeah.
Richard Ingham.
He never has the mullet and has to cut it or anything like that. He just starts out kind of colonel-y or whatever. But and then they have other cast members like Lieutenant Carter, who's this awesome actress. Forgot her name.
She's done a lot of great things on Sci-Fi Channel.
Yeah,
it was also called. Did you ever watch Sanctuary?
Sanctuary's cool. Yeah, she's in that.
Yeah,
I think that's her.
Yeah, that was her.
And then there's this. I forgot the other guy. Anyway, they even have introduce some characters there that would then later show up in. Bo Bridges is later though because he replaced the guy who died. I can't remember anyone's name today, but. They're all really good, and the show is like every week. Ooh, we found this new location on the thing. Let's go through, they'll find some crazy new thing to deal with. It is very Star Trek in that way. They're discovering. Mm-hmm. It's like they're discovering everything,
every week kind of thing.
Kind of like that, yeah. Now there is an overarching story. You know, Anubis. They have a run-ins with Anubis and Ra and everybody.
They're parasites. They're the Gauld. So it's a little bit of a departure from.
Well, the movie just didn't explain it. So, the movie in the movie they said that Ra was this alien that
they implied it was like the big-eyed aliens, but he had found a way.
Yeah, in the show they're symbiote kind of worms basically that take over their bodies and then become they're the horrible evil sentient beings and blah blah blah, but they keep some of that motif. And one of the best parts about the show, Brian, and why I think you should watch it, is Christopher Judge, the actor who's most recently famous for playing Kratos in God of War, the God of War reboot.
Mm. So good.
He plays this character called Teal'c, and Teal'c is one of the guards. So you know these two guards there are two or three guards that are sort of prominently displayed in here that work for Ra. Yeah.
With the headgear.
Yeah. He's one of those. It's like an elite force of you know, these guys. And they're all of certain race. And they never get into this in the movie. But Teal'c ends up coming. It's a long story, but Teal'c ends up joining the team and coming back, and he ends up working for them. And he kind of becomes, it's sort of like in Star Trek, you got Seven of Nine or Data or Spock.
Right.
You know, these kind of like...
Oh, the logic...
like a Worf kind of guy.
Yeah, yeah, like the culturally just a little bit stunted, you know, Drax the Destroyer kind of mindset.
Gotcha.
Yep. He becomes that, and he is one of the most fun, memorable science fiction characters ever.
Man, this SG-1 sounds great. Now I want to watch it.
Well, I wanted to paint that comparison. I think it's important because... the movie could have come and gone, and that would have been it. So I don't know whose decision it was or how they worked it out, but I'm glad they did. Yeah.
And see, I disagree. I think it's hard to watch this movie from beginning to end and not immediately think, okay, there's a lot more potential here for a lot of stories.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I feel like the TV series, the mini series, are sort of like, they're like inevitable.
You just triggered everybody's phone right now. I hope you know.
Hey, Siri.
Hey, mini Siri.
Play Coldplay.
Yeah. That's all she's good for.
Hold on, sorry.
I got to stop Siri. Siri was actually playing Coldplay. Okay, so, but it's inevitable, and it's inevitable because this is such a great story. I'm not certain that it's a great movie, but it's such a great story. It's almost like... it's almost like the mistakes. You're like, how could you have done this in spite of where you had what you had to, as a foundation to work on?
Yeah,
you know?
I would actually say it's a bad movie in its execution, but it's partly because the story. I don't even think the story's that great that they built around it, but their basis, their world building, their concept is so good.
Yes. Yeah. That's absolutely what I was going to say. The universe that they've built here is really, really cool, and I want to know more about. Where they found this thing in the desert and you know all that, and then but boy, did they just paint it with like gray paint,
right? I really think Emmerich shot this chronologically, I believe, and it kind of shows because all the energy is spent at the beginning of the film, because in the beginning Emmerich is really channeling like Spielberg and Lucas in his shots and his ideas. And then about, you know, like you said, like in the second and third act, it just kind of falls into this. It almost feels like a TV show. It just kind of falls apart a little bit.
Yeah. I would say that that's an accurate way of putting it.
And is it because it's so tropey, like, oh, we've discovered an alien land, now we have to start the whole communication thing, and ooh, right. A candy bar is now the gateway to communication, and oh, he's offered me his daughter. I mean, that feels just, like something
you can just keep going.
Alien movies.
Yeah.
Seriously, this is one of the tropiest things I've seen in a long time. I stopped. I ran out of ink. I just didn't care anymore.
This whole film sack episode could be
red alerts. But up to a point, like again, up till the moment they pass through, and I would even say after a little while they were in there, you know, it's seeing the desert and the pillars and the pyramid and them getting set up in camp, right, and trying to decide what they're going to do. Mm-hmm. There's some interesting stuff there. Them forgetting to find out whether or not there's an assured way to get back, and he's like, well, yeah, I can get us back with the seven things, but I don't know what they are till I get over there.
Yeah, I kind of like that. I didn't really notice it before. I kind of like the writing on that, because at first I was like, well, that's silly. That's not consistent with the character. Then I'm like, but then he explains it, because they wipe it away and they go, oh yeah, the reason why the symbols weren't there like they were on Earth is because writing is forbidden. Therefore, what he's looking for is, you know, symbols, and they were all hidden.
Yeah, they're all secret knowledge stuff he had to find through, you know, getting a girlfriend and then digging down.
Right. So Harry freaking out and throwing his books at him from Third Rock from the Sun, by the way, was hard to take serious, by the way, in this movie.
It really was. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You can't watch French Stewart without going, okay, French Stewart.
Speaking of Third Rock from the Sun, Ra, him herself, Ra is absolutely the perfect combination of Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Alanis Morissette. Once you get that in your head, you cannot unsee.
Yeah, it's a fun combination. I think I sent you guys a picture yesterday of him today. He's a big buff, tatted up.
He's a very pretty man in the film. Very different now.
Yeah, right. Very different now.
And they played to that, because that's the reason why, you know, during that time, he just got through the Crying Game, right? Like mm-hmm. years prior to this.
Not even a few. It was a year before. Is all.
So, right. Yeah. And I thought it was interesting. I saw some trivia on this. I thought it was interesting that little breastplate thing he wore mm-hmm. in the movie was because he refused to take out his nipple rings.
Oh.
And I'm like,
he didn't want to take them out?
Yeah.
Oh.
Just afraid they'd close up?
I guess. I don't know. I'm making a movie here.
Crazy bit of trivia for me is that the actor who played Ra, Jay Davidson, is 5'3".
Yeah, a little guy.
How did they make him look so much taller than that in this? Every time he's on screen.
It's also very unusual for somebody with a modeling career, which is what he had before this and some after this, that's that diminutive. Typically, you're, you know, models are generally very tall, like 6 foot and beyond, and he's a little tiny guy, but he very unique looking person. Like, there's no question about mm-hmm. that. There's a maturity and a infantile look to him at the same time. He looks like a little kid, but not. So this idea that the alien possessed a young villager, he's kind of perfectly cast in that regard. Something I did notice that I've forgotten about is the way that they modulate his voice is exactly what they do in the TV show for the god people, for the Anubises, right, and the Ra's and everybody.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and the flashing, the kind of flashing eye thing and all that stuff that they do. Like, they kept a lot of that pretty consistently. And I'll tell you what they absolutely kept was the soundtrack, dude. It was ripped right out of SG-1. Well, I mean, obviously SG-1 ripped it out.
It's such good music, though. I was so impressed by the music.
No, it's incredible.
Is this a Howard Shore joint or
No. So here's I got trivia. David Arnold. Okay? Okay, now here's the deal.
David Arnold. Okay.
At the time, he's working as a clerk at a record store in England. He was recommended to compose the score for the film by a friend. On the DVD's commentary track, Dean Devlin and Roland Emmerich, they're the writer director combo here, admit that they were a bit nervous after hiring him, since his scoring experience at the time was limited to a few very short films and only one full-length movie. Their doubts were gone soon as they heard what Arnold had composed, and they continued their cooperation with him on Independence Day and Godzilla and beyond. And that guy's since gone on to do, like, you know, James Bond reboots and all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. They said that they also state that the quality of his score for the movie is best exemplified by the countless times it was reused in trailers, TV spots, and programs. I would 100% agree, and that is a hell of a find. That's the best mm-hmm. thing about the movie is his scoring. It's really, really good.
Yeah.
My only complaint is that he didn't have alternate themes in his head for the film. He had this one theme, and so we get theme and variations, and by the end of the movie, I'm a little tired of it. Now, having said that, it's reminiscent of like Dragonheart, where you're like, holy cow, this is amazing.
Yeah.
And it's okay that you just keep returning to it because it's that good. I just wish that there was something else going. You know, like how John Williams had Star Wars, and then he also had the Imperial March and this whole other thing.
Yeah.
Luke's theme, Han's theme. Right. Right.
David Arnold only had one theme for this.
Film. This guy was working at a record store compared to Williams, who was like a monumental talent.
So it's like the Brady Bunch, how it's just the different speeds of.
But it was still. I really still enjoyed it so much.
Yeah. I really like. Okay, so I just want to play this. This is. I'm sorry about the tight turn I'm making, but it made me think about the Stargate Atlantis theme, which was not written by him, although it has some stuff in it that's definitely Stargate. But Joel Goldsmith, son of famed composer Jerry Goldsmith, who literally scored last week's movie, Logan's Run, did the theme for that. And I just want to play a tiny bit of it. Hold on a second, because it's one of my favorite little scores of all time. And this first part's very Stargate.
Yeah.
And then it goes nuts. Oh, they open the gate. We got the stuff coming through. Oh, shit.
they promised a lot more action in this one. And the bad guys were really cool. They were race. And they were basically space vampires.
Yeah, they were awesome. What were they called? Wraith.
Yeah, they were Wraith. Yeah.
They were called The Wraith, right? Yeah, The Wraith.
The Wraith, right.
You're just making me want to binge these shows. Like,
I'm going to go watch one. I feel like I need to go watch one. Yeah.
And you get to see a Momoa. So he's like, I think he comes in like season two or three, Momoa.
No, he's there from the beginning.
The Momoa?
No, he's
The Momoa.
He's from there. He's in there from the very get-go. He's a regular cast mate from the start.
I didn't think they started him until season two because they took one of the characters that was a primary character and they put him. I never understood why, but he was a really important part, and then they killed him early
on. Maybe I'm remembering it wrong. I thought he was there from the get-go, but I could be
wrong. No, because they found him on the mainland, I believe.
Oh, well, he's great. He's real good in this. It's ironic that the show is called Stargate Atlantis, and he would go on to become Aquaman one day with his own version of Atlantis. But anyway, back to the movie. Again, we're seeing – I knew this was going to happen, too, in our discussion. This movie would be – it's just not great. But
no,
the seeds were
gate.
There. Yeah. It's a gate
it's a
of
gateway.
Sorts. Yeah, you might call it a Stargate, really, to other things.
It's at 48-49% on Rotten Tomatoes. That makes sense to me. I get that if you come into watching this movie as a critic with sort of like, I'll forgive anything because it's pretty, you're going to like this film. It is really well shot.
Well, it's also that 49% of the film is really good. Like the first half of the film.
Yeah, it's really strong.
If you rate it like that, it's like, about 50% of it is great.
Yeah, it's got really good sound work throughout, I think, except for I only have a couple exceptions. There's they reuse a cocking sound over and over that sounds like it's taken right out of Counter-Strike, and it drives me nuts. Other than that, though, like really good sound mixing and work. It sounded great on headphones. Music was punctuating everything. I thought a lot of the tech still looked cool, and I still get excited when the gate does that flow out thing that it does. And then and the show's famous for having that all the time as well. Although in the early seasons,
the abyss goo, you mean coming out of it?
And just a warning in the early SG-1, it's not as good. It's clearly more expensive to do the movie version. It got better as time went on. So.
Yeah, they had TV. They had TV budget money for Stargate, even though it was Showtime. Because Showtime, this is way back in the day. This is before it was big money and creating content like that. And the one thing that disappointed me about going back and watching SG-1 was realizing how played down the headgear was compared to the headgear in this
movie. I prefer it because the headgear in this movie is freaking stupid. Like, it looks it's cool awesome. Holding still, but the minute it starts puppeting around like a puppet, like a freaking hand puppet,
that. I love that. Because I could imagine being kind of tech inside. I love the little bird heads and stuff. I thought it was amazing.
I mean, as a standalone, you're just standing there concept art. It's awesome.
Right.
Because when we
first get introduced to Tilk in the series SG-1, they just come in, they got like viper heads, and they're very simple, and they look kind of clunky.
Keep in mind, too, it was for a different god that they were serving.
Yeah.
But they were, to me, unwieldy and probably impractical, and I don't know what advantage they actually gave those guys. But it was nice to see Turmeric Vonkowski. What's his name? Hold on. I can't think of his name.
I don't know. That's what I use in my lasagna.
wait. Digimon Hansu, or however you say his
name. Oh, yeah. Digimon Hansu. Yeah. Yes.
Is it Digimon?
Who just went by Digimon. Yeah.
Is it Digimon?
Apparently, yeah.
It's, I don't think you pronounce the D. I think it's Jimon
Hansu. Okay. Yeah, but it was very brief, but I remember that being one of the first times I ever saw that guy, and I think Amistad was not too distant from this, somewhere behind or before it. I don't remember, but he's great. Didn't live long, whatever.
And he didn't have anything to do in this film. Yeah. Like the main guy that they first meet, the leader of the slaves when they get there, I'm forgetting the actor's name, but like he's just stunning.
He's great.
He's amazing.
Yeah, he's awesome. His name is Eric. I had it written down because I had the same thought.
Eric Avari.
Maybe that's it. He's great and he's in everything. I feel like I see him in everything.
He looks like he lives in the desert, right?
Yeah. He totally does. Yeah.
Yeah, he's your Jafar for your live action movie. They should have used him.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Because he can play evil. He can play good.
Although he's now like 1952, so he's, yeah, exactly.
Well, right. That's all right. Make Jafar old. Who cares? Jafar was old, wasn't he? Jafar looked old.
He's an old Jafart.
Yeah. Exactly. But he was younger than us in this thing, like kicking it. By the way, I did a little checking on the ages. I like to do that. Kurt Russell was 42 when they made this.
Wow.
James Spader was 34 is all. Just a young buck there, James Spader, with his sweet hair, looking good.
Speaking of, we haven't done this in a while, but we have to give the worst IMDb photo to James Spader. There's no contest. I don't know what he or his agent is thinking. It's horrible.
What? The him standing in front of like some awards?
He's standing in front of words you can't see. It looks like the words are like ope anus or something like that. He looks really bad. Like he looks just wretched.
He just looks like an
aging actor. He looks fine. I don't think he looks bad there. I think he looks fine. He looks kind of cool. The one I would look at in here and say let's turn it around. The best IMDb photo is Kowalski, aka John Deal. Look at that dude. He's cool, man. I want him in all my westerns. I want him in every movie that I need a crusty, smart, good-looking, handsome. Yeah. Like he is a handsome mother scratcher. Look at that dude.
Just now realizing that it's almost like the producers of the film didn't know how to spell Kowalski. Like they said, I don't know, Kawal something.
Yeah, it's not
you
right.
You gotta have
it?
A Kowalski in your military movie,
yeah,
though, right?
But you spell that's it K O W A L S K I. That's the only way to spell Kowalski. Yeah.
That's the way I spelled it in my notes.
Okay, I got one. I got one. Randy, I'll challenge you and say Giannin Loeffler is your IMDb crap photo of the week.
How far do I have to go down to see that?
It's
in the first list. He's just below French Stewart. But
by the way, French Stewart looking good in his IMDb.
I think they used Fred Schneider's photo from the B-52s for French Stewart.
this character, Giannin Loeffler.
Don't go through the star gate.
It was that character.
If you see hieroglyphics on the side of the road.
It looks like him. Sorry, go ahead, Dunaway. What we
no, no, no. That,
and I won't do it anymore. I feel like
it was for the intro. I get it. I'm well.
He knows. He knows what's up.
I'm well. So that character, they were playing with this idea. I don't think they ever really came across too well. They were playing with the idea that this planet that everybody was at was was a collection of people across the galaxy, and some of these people were not as far evolved as other. And I feel like he was supposed to, his character was supposed to be like a Neanderthal or something.
Well, maybe. Yeah. So yeah. The first thing I did when I saw him, I said, "Oh my God, is that the guy who played Chaka on Land of the Lost?"
Right.
Because he's got a very
similar.
Looks
like, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, I don't want to say he's got a face that looks like a caveman, but he can be made up very well to look like a caveman or Neanderthal. Unfortunately, I was bummed to find that he did not play Chaka on Land of the Lost.
He's definitely not Chaka, but he looked just like Chaka. The idea, so this is something they carry through on the show. The idea that the people are scattered to different parts of the universe that all came from the same gene pool as the people who grew up in Egypt in our time, in our Earth timeline, is very cool. Right. And they go really interesting places with that on the show, because that's exactly what they do. And so it's a great way for them to deal with this issue of the universe is full of people that look just like us. Star Trek tries to cover that up by saying, well, some of them have bumpy noses and these guys have longer ears and, you know, they kind of make them alien, but they're still humanoid. This is just straight up. No, we're all from the same gene pool. So no matter what you're running into, with the exception of the Gua'uld and the Wraiths and the kind of weird, you know, the real big baddies of the show, everybody's just people. Mm-hmm. And it's, I think it works real well on, especially on the shows, because it's a fun take on that without, you know, it's discovering, it's like a discovery in itself. It's like, oh, right. they're not only like us, they are us, because we were all from, you know, we're all from the same thing. And this idea that as I was a kid growing up, you'd look at like Egyptian culture and all the pyramids and the you know, all the weird imagery and everything when you're young, it's just so out of this world. And this show where this concept comes in and says, all right, that's how we feel too. What if we make it truly out of this world? What if the origins of all of it aren't here? They're from somewhere else. And while not historically accurate, it's a really fun playground to mess around in.
It's funny to point out, too, by the way. Oh, I'm sorry. You know what? You go first, Randy. Go ahead.
I just like the idea that you can take it anywhere. Like, it makes me sad that only the mysteries around Atlantis are the place that it really ever went. Because you could just go all around the world like Indiana Jones. Like, oh, well, here's something that's weird from long ago. Mm-hmm. And boom. Oh, Stargate right there.
Yeah. Well, they do a lot of that, especially in SG-1. SG-1 is a all over the place thing, whereas Atlantis was weird because it turned out Atlantis was not on Earth. It was a long ways away and in a place they couldn't get back from. They never could get the coordinates. Right. Or maybe they
actually found at the end, near the ending of season, I guess it was 9 or 10 of SG-1, maybe a little earlier than that, they discovered a second gate, and that's the one that allowed them to go further.
Right, and that's where they got to Atlantis and then got cut off.
Supergate.
And then and so they really
2.0 basically.
they really did do this thing though where SG-1 kind of lived in the same era as TNG, and Voyager kind of lived in the same era as Atlantis, and Atlantis may be more the criminal here, but you know, they were stealing that idea. They were like, well, what if we got cut off? You know, lost in space kind of idea. And that's what they went with. And I actually think it worked a lot better for Stargate than it did for the other thing. Right. And the main guy, what was his name? Jack, I can't remember the name.
Jack O'Neill, you're talking about?
No,
his character?
No, the one in Atlantis. Who was the guy in charge?
Oh, yeah, Jack Shepard.
Jack Shepard is awesome.
Yeah, I loved his character.
He was freaking great. Oh, my gosh, you guys. I just want to watch more Stargate. Anyway.
We can tell, Scott. Yeah. We can really...
Yeah,
and the thing I was going to point out is that you know, talking about the Egyptian hieroglyphics and visual, it's funny that last week we have a movie that has nothing to do with Egypt, yet the Ankh is featured primarily through the whole thing. Now we've got a movie that takes place in the culture that inspired Egypt with a bunch of symbols all over the damn place, and not a single Ankh to be seen.
No Ankhs.
No Ankhs.
Right. Yeah, Ankh free zone is what this was. By the way, I don't know if you guys knew this, but Roland Emmerich is currently rolling into his next project, which is Independence Day Resurgence. It's a new movie by...
Part 3?
He's writing it and directing it. It's a film, 2016. It was started. I don't know what the plan is. Let's see.
I thought that... Are you talking about the one that just came out, or are you talking about a third?
I thought there was a reboot happening, no?
There wasn't. It already happened. It already came out.
Oh,
yeah. With Jeff Goldblum, but no Will Smith.
Hold on a second.
Data was back.
Right, Data was back.
Not all that. Hold
this
on.
The third thing?
Stargate. Let me look this up.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah,
here
it is.
That was
the last thing he did.
Here it is. It doesn't have a date yet. It's just, let's see. This is being developed as a trilogy.
Oh, okay. So it is a new
so film
it's
series.
It's beyond Resurgence, though. Resurgence was the one from 2016. So there's right. What'd you say it was?
Have I not seen Resurgence? I need
you
to.
Probably haven't.
Is that
it would not be hard.
It's okay if you didn't see it, by the way.
Was it a direct to DVD thing or what was the deal there?
No, it went to the theater.
I was thinking you guys were saying there was a Stargate Resurgence. Independence Day I knew about. Sorry. I'm confused about what's happening.
I thought
you were saying it was a movie. Yeah. I'm being dumb. anyway, point is he's supposedly working on directing another one. Now I don't know how I feel about that. Ooh. Because
a new Stargate.
Just to forget about Independence Day. Let's pretend it's dead because it is. We're done with it. It's gone.
It doesn't exist. Easy to do, yes.
Let's just talk about Stargate, the film that he is supposedly working on now. If that's true, I am both excited and nervous because I think that thing deserves a reboot somewhere, TV, movie, whatever. But I don't know how I feel about him just going right back to it because I don't think he's that great of a director. I mean, his recent stuff is that horrible. Well, we'll bring it up again, Independence Day Resurgence, but also White House Down was very bad.
Right.
10,000 BC was really, really bad. Day After Tomorrow was good, but...
He's what I call a producer idea man. That's where he should stay.
Well, he's just directing he's really all these, it. Though. It's all him and his brother, Roland and Noah, is it? Noah's the other one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they make some... Like, once in a while, something decent will happen, and then, like, The Patriot's decent, Day After Tomorrow's decent... Godzilla, Independence Day. Well, some people like it.
Independence Day. I like the original. I like it a lot. And the Godzilla from 1988. I'm not that
you're
hard on.
A bunch of wait. You're talking about the one with
Matthew Broderick.
Matthew Broderick and Harry Shearer. Who's the other guy from The Simpsons? Hank Azaria.
Yeah, Hank Azaria. Yeah.
It's a bad movie. It's not good.
I didn't say it wasn't a bad movie. I said enjoyed it.
I feel like you're naming a bunch of films that are very much of a kind, mm-hmm. and that kind is of a time, and we're past that time.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, they're in post-production for Midway, which I assume is a war movie. Or maybe it's just, where do you put the graham cracker and what's her name's belly button? Midway up her torso. I don't actually know. Let's see.
But it does feel like it's right. The post-Pearl Harbor, the sequel to Pearl Harbor, basically.
Oh yeah, that's totally what this is. This is the Battle of Midway. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it may be good. I don't know. I mean, I don't want to count him down, but so far it's a lot of popcorn and not a lot of, you know, serious
but
movie.
But that's
making.
Always been his thing, you know? Yeah. The popcorn. Yeah. That's what I like about it. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's a really nice guy, like, by all accounts. Everything I could read about him, everyone loves this guy. He's one of the few openly gay directors in Hollywood, and there's probably a bunch non-openly gay, but he's the only one that's openly gay and been proud of it and never afraid to say so, and I always kind of admired that about him in the 90s because nobody else was doing that, and he was willing to just, you know, say who he was and be cool with it and then go keep making his movies. Like, I like him a lot. I just think his movies are kind of, I don't know, just
What'd you think about 2012?
I hated it. I did not like that movie at all.
I had fun.
Well, of course
I'm
you
not
did.
Saying it's a good it's movie.
It is a park your brain at the door kind of film, and I do feel like we need to see it again because, like Stargate, the only time I've seen it is in the theaters. Have not watched it since like it's come to streaming or anything like that.
That is also true of me. That's the last time I saw it as well, and I hated it in the theaters. I thought it was really bad.
And we do have a long-standing promise that when we do 2012 for FilmSec, Tom Merritt has to be here for it.
Yeah,
yeah.
And we've been promising that since like 2009, so we got to follow through.
Well, I think it was since 2012.
Oh yeah.
That would have to be, wouldn't it?
We said in 2009, we said, now listen, if they ever make a movie called 2012.
Speaking of Tom Merritt, did anybody else watching this movie keep thinking about Dances with Wolves? Just me?
No.
That's a weird. That's
Raiders
weird.
Of the Lost Ark came up in my head.
Okay,
but not,
so
Close Encounters, so, Raiders
close
of the Lost Ark.
Yes.
Let me just run down a little bit of the parallels. So John Dunbar is suicidal, right?
Okay. Dunbar.
Yeah. He
for at least the first 5 minutes of the film, he is.
Yeah. He wants to die. just like Kurt Russell in this movie.
Yeah.
And by the way, how weird to encounter a guy who's clearly in a fugue state holding a gun and be like, here's your orders. See you at the base.
Yeah. Well, didn't he hide the gun?
What's wrong with you people?
Thought he hid
you tell
the gun.
Him. I'm going to tell him. You tell him. Yeah. No, I'm not going to tell him.
He hid the gun. They didn't know.
The same exact thing happens in freaking Dances with Wolves. Like, he tries to kill himself. He gets a promotion. So I forgot about that.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Then he goes to the frontier, right? Which in this case is the distant galaxy sand planet, Hoth. Not Hoth. Sand planet. Tatooine,
yeah.
Tatooine.
And, so same thing as in Dances with Wolves. We have a magical white men are here to save you redemption story. Literally is given a woman. It's just like weird how these parallels just keep going and going. And like, he's the only one who can speak to them. And they, you know, like everybody else is just like,
even
oh,
the one
whatever.
That becomes basically in Dances with Wolves kind of becomes his brother. And this one kind of becomes like his son. I'm starting to see it. Yeah. I think I know where you're. Yeah. I think you're wrong.
What's the first thing he sees when he gets there? That no, Tatanka, right there. There's the buffalo. It's just weird. I kept thinking of Dances with Wolves. I couldn't get it out of my head.
Oh, the poor horses. They had to have all that shit on them, dude. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. First, we're gonna have you guys in the desert walking around carrying a bunch of stuff, and now we're gonna completely obstruct your face. Have fun.
About the horses. It was odd. They just. Did they not have the budget for more horses, or you know, because were they
never going to make you sound like Chewbacca?
Yeah. Well, they only used one. And it says in the trivia there were dogs as well that looked just like mini versions of them. I didn't see one of those. Right. Didn't see one. Right. So I don't know what they're talking about.
They just put them closer up and pretend like it's further away.
I don't know.
It's a visual trick.
It's up in the distance. There's a
no. They horse. But they really did. They used that one horse with the headset with the appliance on him, and then they just kept using him. There was never two of those in a row. I don't think that I ever saw.
By the way, those scenes were all shot out in Imperial County, California, which surely they did it in the winter. They must have gone out there in the winter. There's no way they would have shot this in the summer because that stretch of dunes and sand is impossible to live in during the summer. But
yeah,
probably 125 degrees or something in the summer.
This was the biggest plot hole or plot point that bugged me about this movie. Out of everything that bugged me out of this movie, the fact that Daniel Jackson brought Fifth Avenue bars with him to a desert planet with chocolate. And keeps handing out chocolate. And I'm like, there's no way. He's been carrying it around in his pocket desert.
Ooh, as soon as you tear open the packet, it just doesn't ooze out.
Yeah. Yeah, that was.
He'd be pouring that thing out.
Yeah. That was, they were way too.
Hold your hand out.
It made me either I worried about their poor choice of what product to have in your hot pocket, or I worried that Fifth Avenue bars get gross after a while and they shouldn't be that solid. Although, what's his name? Happy Joe Lucky over there was thrilled to be eating one. He was stoked.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you lived in a desert, I'd be eating some melted chocolate too. Sure, why not? Yeah.
But I love the idea. Like, there's another cool idea in there. The Daniel Jackson having to get around to understanding these people was because the spoken language was a dead language on Earth, and we hadn't heard it said or spoken, so we didn't know what it sounded like. So now he's hearing these words and these symbols that he's known for all this time, and it's suddenly, you'd say it completely different than we all think. It's like how we paint and draw and animate a dinosaur. We don't really know, you know, like we don't know because it's a dead thing that we have bones and that's it. So we don't know what the outer sides, we don't know about, you know, we now have learned, well, maybe there were feathers. Okay, well, maybe they were multicolored and had all kinds of wacky colors and stuff. So we're slowly getting there. But originally, they just looked like big lizards to us because that's the best we got. And in his case, I love this concept of, you know, ancient Egyptian and the language that they knew, which turns out to be this intergalactic language, was all we had was symbols. So we just have made up however we thought it sounded. So when people started talking, we're like, what the hell are they saying? Like, it's great. I love that stuff.
Yeah, you know? And I love the fact that he was able to finally, you know, once he was... They killed him so they could put him in the, you know, the mummy microwave, and they fixed him and made him come back out, and then he could understand them. Right. So that was
the mummy microwave.
Put it on 15 minutes. Beep, beep, beep.
Yeah, there's some stuff in there that's pretty hokey. Like the way that they're helmet stuff would like collapse in on itself, and the way he morphed, like Ra morphed out of his stupid headdress into a normal face, that stuff looked real bad.
I don't know how normal it was, but sure.
It looked pretty bad for even 94 standards. Like, we had Jurassic Park the year before. Pressure was on.
Right.
You know, like, if your movie didn't at least look as good as Jurassic Park in terms of its effects, you were in trouble in the early
visually, 90s. The movie that I parallel visually to this film in some ways, in certain scenes, is The Fifth Element.
Me too. Yeah. I totally get that vibe.
During that time frame.
Yeah. And they have,
the beginning part of The Fifth Element has that desert, the pyramids and stuff like that. Yeah, they do a good, that's a really good comparison there.
So the same time frame, right? Like the 20s or 30s, right. And except that one had the 90210 kid in it. What was his name?
Luke Perry.
I wish there was a way to introduce these white savior characters coming in to look at the work that's being done by the workers, other than the way we always introduce them. You know, they always come in a hurry, and everybody has been poking the dirt with sticks and brushing the stuff off, and they're so excited to show
erecting the
them.
Gate. Mm-hmm. Why are they erecting the gate?
Stop! What are you
That's
doing?
The dumbest. Like, imagine if you were any kind of scientist discovering something historic, and a bunch of slaves, I guess, indentured servants, I don't know, are like, let's stand it up. Whoa!
It's a circle. Exactly. Don't stand it up.
Exactly. Like, they'll go work on the capstone with a little, little brush and brush the sand off. Oh, yeah, that thing over there? Nah, hoist it up with some ropes.
Yeah.
I think it belongs upright.
Yeah,
this looks like a plinth. Let's get it going.
Let's see if we can roll it down the hill.
Did you guys, would you call that, when you erect the gate, would you call that an erectile dysfunction on the part of the people who decided to put it up
they
there?
They failed.
Okay. You just
it's definitely a dysfunction.
Yeah, no question. I do love just
anything.
If
they knew so much about the gate in the 20s, why did it take them 70 years to figure out how to work it? I would like to know that.
Well, you know.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest logic flaws in this film that we need Daniel Jackson to come in and figure out that the last symbol is the home symbol. Because, I mean, there's maybe, 20 or 30 symbols on there. And they went, this is as far as we've gotten to six chevrons. Where I'm like, well, how many more tries do you need? I mean, you just went 20 more tries or something? You couldn't figure that out in 2 years?
Yeah. That seemed a little off.
We don't want to try it too many times.
Right. Yeah. That's what they easily could have done when they got to the other planet. And James Spader says, oh, no, we've just lost the last symbol. Well, you know what? Let's just try each one until something opens up. Although maybe you get sent somewhere really bad.
They do actually.
You dial a wrong number.
That's a frequently touched upon thing on the show. So the SG-1.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. They'll hit. Sometimes it's an emergency. They're like, just dial anything. We have to get out of here because they'll be on some planet where they're getting attacked, and they'll flip it around and do a bunch of randos, and then they end up somewhere they have no idea where they are because they had to hurt. You know, like they actually play with that a little bit, and it's pretty,
which is
pretty
fun. And that's how isn't that what happened to O'Neill one time where he got lost on a planet and he was there for like 2 or 3 years and had a family and everything else?
It was very Star Trek flute playing Picard episode kind of deal going there. Yeah. There's some good stuff on there. Yeah, go ahead.
Right. Oh, there was one other thing I was going to say about the gate, but I've totally forgotten.
That's because of me. It's because of me. It's because of me. I did it.
That's good.
Okay, how about this? Here's some trivia. I tried to hear this, and I just couldn't hear it. But James Brown's scream, "I feel good," was used as a sound effect in the scene demonstrating the alien taking control of the young boy's body. So obviously modulated and changed and stretched out and slowed down and who knows what, but
I feel good. That beginning scream.
Yeah.
I really would have liked to have heard that.
I didn't even capture the moment because it just didn't sound like it to me. I should have done it so we could fiddle around here and see if we could hear it. But well,
then that makes it one of those bits of trivia that's undisprovable.
Yeah.
So you could put that bit of trivia in any movie's IMDb page.
Undisprovable.
There you go. Oh, wait a minute. My brain's collapsing on itself. I need the seventh seal. All right, check this out. Alexis Cruz, who played Scara, she's the lady friend, and Eric Avari, Kusef, the dude in charge of the village people. I'm sorry, not the village. The giant
village
city.
People.
The giant city of like clay. That was the biggest city of clay I've ever seen in my life. Anyway, they were the only actors to appear in both the movie in 1994 and the series in 1997. So they're the only two. Everybody else was a replacement and or whatever.
Did she play the... You said Alexis Cruz, so Sakara, who was the guy, and then you said...
No, Scara was the... Oh, I thought that was the lady.
No, Scara was Alexis Cruz. No, 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 no.
Well, no, I know Scara's Alexis Cruz. I'm saying who's the... What character was
oh,
that?
Oh, is Mila Avatar?
Oh, that the lady?
Sharui? Yeah, okay. Sharu.
Okay, so this is... We're talking about the kid that wore his shirt way too high. The
they
one?
All wore their shirts too. That was fashionable.
It was really desert. Fashionable. Really ugly.
By the way, my viewing buddy and this Audra, she was watching this movie with me. Mm. And did anyone else have any confusion of if it was actually time travel? Because she kept thinking that the gate was going back in time to Earth.
So no. Yeah, basically you were just going to Egypt, ancient
right.
Egypt.
Nope. Right. They never. Well, I'm sorry, I shouldn't say that. So the way it worked was when they had the uprising and during ancient Egypt's time, mm-hmm. when they were being occupied by Ra and his forces, there was a people upheaval, and they forced them back through the gate and then buried the gate so that nobody could couldn't get through.
I got that, but Audra was like, I was just wondering if the
I also had that question. Right, I had that question quite a bit because. The technology around identifying where you were going was such obvious bullshit. Like that I was just like, okay, there. I feel like I'm being told a lie, and I have to figure out what the truth actually is. You know, like, there, it's another galaxy. Look, we have a chart of galaxies. That's freaking weird. Like, I don't understand why you have that right there.
Right.
You know, and so on and so on. And then they're like, they go through it, and I'm like, oh, they just went back in time to the Egyptian desert. I'm confused about a lot less about that idea than the other.
Yeah, the idea is that the imagery and the clothes and the whole motif of ancient Egypt is just what the aliens look like when they're doing their shit. Mm-hmm. And so they've never changed. Like, here we are thousands of years later and they're still just who they are out in space. They just haven't, you know, been able to go back to Earth and do anything about it.
You know what? I think I was mad by the point where they're saying, oh, look, it's this other galaxy. I was mad because they had brought in the only guy who could solve everything for them and not shown him what's going on in the facility until we get everybody together and we're like, surprise, you're the only one in the room who's never looked through this window. And I was just like, no. No, you're bad people, and I would have left if I was him. I don't want to be here anymore.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the idea was...
We just happen to have it right here.
The idea is that he's like, oh, I'm super suicidal. I'll do this, because what else is life for now? Like, I think that's flimsy. Like, I agree with you. That entire premise of, like, here's everything. Okay, let's go through. Like, come on. Like, there's you'd be months, years training, getting ready. There was no rush to do this.
Like, yeah, if you can send Johnny Five through it once and he comes back fine, or you get information back fine, you would do it again and again and again. You would just keep getting more and more information. Okay, now let's put a video camera on the robot with VHS, you know?
Yeah, it's very weird. But just to answer everybody's question on time travel, they never actually touched on it in the film, and the show didn't touch on it until an episode called Mobius, which was... See, two-part finisher for season 8. And that's the first time SG-1 or any Stargate stuff said, hey, let's talk about the idea of time travel. And they did it with some, let's see, there was the Daedalus, which is this Earth-built battle cruiser capable of reaching the Pegasus Galaxy. So this is kind of a crossover with Atlantis because the Daedalus is a ship that's flown by Mitch Pileggi
X-Files.
Yeah, he's great in it. So there's this whole, it's a big crossover mess with those guys. But anyway, they don't really even touch it. It takes them 8 seasons. So here's a sci-fi show that doesn't get tempted by the time travel very often, mm-hmm. which I kind of like, you know?
Thank goodness.
Yeah. Maybe this might become Ibbitt's favorite science fiction show of all time. Because it doesn't have bad time.
You guys keep selling me on this. I wanna binge it right now.
I kind of
honestly watching this film. I never thought we were just gonna sit here and get hyped about the TV show by Scott. I don't know why.
I knew I would because, well, obviously because I'm here hyping it, but because it just reminded me of how much I love it. And it's been enough time where, you know, it's kind of like when you watched a ton of Star Trek and then you kind of not watch it for a while. And then you come back, you're like, oh, yeah, duh, Star Trek is so good to have you back in my life. That's how I'm feeling very Stargate right now.
That's why I'm really surprised you haven't watched any of The Orville, because it is the next generation just with a new coat of paint.
I don't know why I'm not doing
that.
I don't know why I'm not doing it. I'll do it.
And the last three episodes have just been off the chain. It's hard to believe how far they've gone.
This two-parter that they're starting this last week, I'm really, like, this is the first time with a two-parter for something in a long time that I've been like, oh my God, when is the next part of this coming out?
Yeah.
Seriously, like at the end of each of the last three episodes, I've been like, I smell Emmy. Like, this is no longer just a bunch of jokes and references, but it's become its own thing that's beyond what it should be. Like, it just the last three episodes. I don't want to get my expectations any higher. Yeah. It's too good. Like, it's the best thing on television, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm in. Yeah, I need to get on it. Everyone says what you're saying. Everyone's saying to me, and I don't know what my problem is. I know
I'm
what it is.
That you don't hear it from too many people to get your expectations too high.
Yeah.
Oh no, I think I'm gonna like it. I just need to do it. I don't know why I don't. This is up my alley. I think I just have this binge mentality now, where I'm just like, well, it'll always be here.
And don't worry, you can binge the whole first season
in like 6 hours.
Yeah, it's pretty short. So if we do end up seeing, we were talking before the show, and we'll talk about it again at the end, but if we end up seeing the pilot of the TV show SG-1, that'll be interesting, because that thing's I know there are different cuts of it, but it's full of nudity because of the original Showtime airing. Showtime, basically, according to the producers, required the nudity. And
that sounds about right for pay cable in the 90s.
Yeah, I think it's even true today sometimes, but Showtime got their way, even though the producers didn't want to do it. But then things got sold off, and I remember this being mostly in syndication or something. I don't remember.
Right.
Yeah.
They only made a season on Showtime before it went.
But eventually, this thing passed a bunch of hands. It was like in regular, like TNG-style syndication for a long time, which is how TNG happened. Didn't really have a home base. And then was bought by the Sci-Fi Channel and finished its run there. And then subsequent shows were Sci-Fi exclusive, you know, versions of the show, which back when they made a lot more sci-fi than they do now. I can't remember exactly, but it is a little bit weird. If you've never seen that cut version of it, or that uncut version of it, you feel like you're in a different world. You'd be like, oh, I'm going to watch SG-1 again. I remember this being suitable for all ages. Here, Nick, sit down. You're 5. We can watch this together. Ah, full frontal lady parts. It's really weird. Yeah, it's very weird. Anyway, I was also going to say, I forgot now. Oh, computers would have solved everything. I just wanted to put those out there. Phones, computers, Daniel Jackson doing the presentation to the war room. Like, dude, giant scrolls of paper. This sucks.
But the computers that they did show felt like they were archaic even for the 90s.
Yeah.
Like when they had the soldiers going through the Stargate, and they had a screen they were looking at that just had each soldier like a little pictogram of each soldier like fading out.
Yeah.
It looked like video game. computers from freaking Alien.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's how they looked.
Yeah, they were. And by the way, our chick in the bucket this week, here, I'm gonna do this upright because this is important. It's a lot of people, but in particular, it's Vivica Lindfors, who's awesome in this. She died a year later. Incredible actress. With a long career, and she's very good in this, I think. She's the old lady that recruits him, recruits Daniel Jackson at the beginning.
Yeah, and she's a trope, too.
She is, but she's great, man. She's so good. I was able to look past her tropiness because she's just
I want to talk about that trope. It's called the mysterious benefactor.
Yeah. Well, and we knew she was the little girl, right, from the 40s shots. So
yeah, we tie that in through the pendant that she has. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But for him, it's like
some... Dull.
Yeah.
Some stranger Some stranger in the rain is like, there's a car here for you. Somebody in here wants to talk to you. You're like, okay, I'll just get in that car.
Well, you know, he had just gotten laughed out of a a conference or out of lecture. So it's like, what have I got to lose?
Yeah.
That itself is so ridiculous. That there were 100 people that came to see this thing and all jeered at him. Like, no.
Yeah.
There's nothing more James Spader than that look of when he was looking in the limo with trepidation before he would get in there. Whether or not he was kind of like,
yeah, it is.
Yeah. I'd love him. Nobody could do that. Gosh dang it, I love him.
How come the heavy rain doesn't trigger his stupid allergies, by the way?
But you're right, Scott. For the rest of the film, she's just riding around in a limo, picking up random scientists, giving them a job.
Wait,
just
her
in case we need a replacement. Yeah.
She's like the Professor X. She's like it's that trope. It's the wise person who's seen a lot, has a crap ton of money, and is.
Yeah,
cherry picking people for their project.
They get in her limo, and she's like, "I've been waiting to meet you, Doctor. Hold on, I'm gonna check my notes, Doctor Jacobs. I've been waiting to meet you."
But I'm gonna give it to her and Richard Kind. So Richard Kind, one of my favorite comedic sort of character actor dudes, the very man who accidentally spit on me on stage in Chicago in 1988.
I'm so glad you bring that up. Anytime there's any mention of Richard Kind,
he was at Second City doing an improv, and I got spit on by accident. It was just frothing, and he spit on me on the front row. But anyway, Richard Kind's great, and some people are hearing this go, they're saying, who the hell's that? Well, I guarantee you've seen him. He walked dogs for what's the comedy, the
Mad About You.
That's one way.
No, Hank Azaria was the dog walker. He was the
friend
of
it was his friend, Paul Reiser's friend or something.
Paul Reiser's friend.
Something like that. Because
his brother was the Leisure Suit Larry guy.
Right. He's also in Sin City. What was the Michael J. Fox show? Something City. Big City.
Spin City.
And he's in a ton of movies. If you've seen Bug's Life, he's the second in command brother of the Kevin Spacey grasshopper that's just goofy and always being an idiot. Well, that's him. Anyway, Richard Kind. Amazing guy. Oh, and he's also in Toy Story or something else. Some other Pixar movie.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's in this, and he's only there to be embarrassed because he got all his shit wrong.
Right.
And then him and old lady Linfors just get left, and that's the end of them. Like, the movie just leaves.
Yeah,
right. I think this may be part of my problem because they established all of those characters and those people at the home base so well and then just left it. We're just like, done. We're in the Stargate.
Because they're using the old. You guys are using the Flemberg method of hieroglyphics. What's the matter with you? Yeah, I thought that was debunked like years ago. We're using the
Flemberg.
Moorschmidt.
I think the Flemberg method is good. I like that a lot. But anyway, that kind of bummed me out. But I'm going to give that whole crew, everybody from the general down to her, they get chicken the bucket status this week, I think, which is a real bummer.
Well, we found out what happened to him later on in the TV series, so I guess.
No, that's true. And we have them, I never remember his name, something Johnson. He was great as the general.
Passed Johnson!
Him, had a heart attack and died and way too young, but he was awesome.
You talking about Cliff Clavin's brother?
It's the guy who was...
Don...
Was he Cliff Clavin's brother?
Don...
No, he looked like him in the movie.
Don something.
No, it's the guy who was the... Dark Man villain, wasn't it? Am I thinking of the right guy?
No, not him. That's the guy from L.A. Law.
Who played
the handicapped guy. Different guy.
Yes.
So hold on. Don something. I'm going to look it up. Here we go. Stargate. Don Davis. He's the dude in charge for the most of Stargate, and then Bo Bridges takes over after he passed. But and not the same character. He's a different guy in that. But anyway... Yeah, he died in 2008. That guy, amazing. And the show is so much more about the home base and the politics of that and the government getting involved. And the doctor from Voyager has a role on there that's continuing. And you get weird people. Freaking Q is on there a bunch of times, but not as Q.
Oh, yeah.
But there are a lot of Star Trek crossovers. Yeah. Oh, I wish I was Brian Hibbett. You got this big thing. Yeah. And keep in mind, just like, you know, Star Trek or DS9 that you just binged through recently.
First
You got to get through it. It doesn't suck. It doesn't suck, but it's not going to be indicative of where they get, you know?
Like, gotcha. Right. Okay.
So just know that.
All right, it's a race. It's a race. Who's going to get through the first season first? You with the Orville or me with Stargate SG-1?
Well, now it's a challenge. Now we got to.
Orville's so easy. Come on.
I'll get right to the Orville. Okay. Don't you worry. Also,
they're both 13 episodes, right?
Yeah,
I hope.
Yeah. Now, Randy, maybe you have a name for this trope. I don't know. But the one where visitors come to a new planet, island, place, whatever it is, somewhere foreign to them, and the first thing they do is drink the shit somebody brings them? No.
Oh, it's so common, though.
I don't like it.
Maybe it'll taste like chicken.
It always tastes like chicken.
That was very Indiana Jones.
First drink this water out of this, whatever it is. It's the back of one of these creatures that have been sitting out in the sun.
Yeah.
I can't believe they drank it.
Like when they die.
Just pooped in there.
Yeah.
At least the Fifth Avenue bar was wrapped in, you know, had a wrapper. I would never
trust that. I don't care who you are, what you're doing. I wouldn't do it. I'll be like, where's the Starbucks? Is there a McDonald's around here? Like, get me away from this.
That's why you'll end up on the end of a pike.
Yeah.
Tastes like chicken is a trope. That's the more important one. Like, for some reason, this is how we humans just, agree with anything that tastes okay. We have to say that it tastes like chicken.
Yep. That's true.
I don't know what our thing is.
But he handled it really well. He goes, oh, it tastes like chicken. Hey, guys, tastes like chicken. Like, he did it in that James Spader kind of, like, bumbly way. And it made the trope a little fresher to me because it was him playing off the trope in a way that was a little bit new. It wasn't just, this tastes like chicken. You know what I mean? Right. It was like he was laughing at himself.
But then to explain to the quote-unquote alien race that, oh, no, it tastes like chicken, bok, bok, bok. They don't know what that is.
That's what was funny. Right.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, the later scene where one of them is looking for someone else and Kurt Russell's looking for James Spader, and he's like trying to act out who he's looking for, and they just keep repeating
turns
what he's
Simon
doing.
Says.
Exactly. That was actually
it's funny, but it's just like, have we learned nothing up to this point, and we're just gonna we're just gonna stand here and make funny faces? Okay.
Well, what bums me out
a
little bit.
You guys know dweeb.
What bugs me out is you did say dweeb in there, didn't he? We don't get dweeb a lot in movies that are made after the 80s. That's pretty good. But he was kind of a non. I mean, I like him. Like, Kurt Russell is great. In some movies, he's really great. Like, go watch that movie about the hockey thing, the Miracle movie. He's fantastic as the American coach in that thing. Like, Oscar-worthy stuff in lots and lots of movies. There was a period, though, in the early 90s where it's just this, and he just stands there and doesn't do anything, and he just looks angry, and there's nothing to it. Yeah, I don't like it.
Well, you know, this is, and I'll tell you, I love Kurt Russell. But this Kurt Russell was looking to eat a sandwich because he was super thin. Mm-hmm. And I like Kurt Russell. He's an attractive man, but his head's too big for a little bitty small frame. He doesn't need to do that. He needs to always have some meat on him to look proper. I know because I also do that big head.
But he's so dynamic even in like the Guardians 2 movie. Like, he's just a great actor with lots of range, and he needs to smile more. And this thing was just not. They don't showcase him at all. It's just like, I'd also think of this. Richard Dean Anderson, America's MacGyver, took that role on the TV show and made it dynamic and funny, like laugh out loud funny. It's so different than this. Right. This is just stoic and boring and not great.
Well, and he's now become an actor that you trot out. They trotted him out in the last couple of Fast and the Furious movies. I feel like his performance in Guardians of the Galaxy 2 was a trot out. Oh, there's the Kurt Russell appearance. Uh-huh. He has a bit more meat on the role in Hateful Eight, but not much. He's kind of just there to be Kurt Russell playing a character for a little bit.
Yeah.
It was the most exciting part of the movie for me. When I saw the trailer, I was like, yeah, I'm seeing that.
Yeah, you definitely.
In that role.
Yeah, everybody's got Tombstone memories. They want to see him in Westerns. Like, they can't help it. They can't help it. Like, I watched that Bone Tomahawk movie because he's in it. And that is a weird-ass, funky
movie. Is it a full role? Like, where he's in the whole movie?
Oh, yeah. It's a full role, but that is a weird-ass movie. I don't know if I recommend it. It's like, It's a horror movie, really, and it's so gory and over the top. I don't even know how to explain it. Bone Tomahawk is funky.
Like Mandy level over the top?
Yes,
or,
yes. Perfect comparison. Imagine Mandy set in the Old West. Done.
Okay, all right.
There's your movie. Yeah. Did you finally watch Mandy? You watched it, didn't you?
No, oh. Not yet. I just know it's pretty over the top.
You need to watch Mandy so we can talk about it. I want to talk to someone about Mandy just for therapy, because that movie,
all right.
What the hell?
Wow.
What
all
the
right.
hell is
just,
going on
just
there?
Just to parse your way through it.
Yeah. What a weird thing that was. Anyway, I was going to make a mention of this before I forget. My favorite teleportation in any science fiction is actually from this movie, and the TV show used it as well. I love those rings that come down and go.
Oh, the rings. Yes. The teleportation through the Stargate, though, of the like.
Oh, yeah, that sucks.
Like
that
going
sucks.
Through the stars.
Yeah, that's dumb. Nobody likes
but
that.
But no, the rings are
cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The rings.
Unfortunately,
are awesome.
They used it as the method by which to
the dismemberment.
To end the movie. That I was like, really? All this fighting and that.
Plus, he's already dead.
Bombs around.
He was already dead too, which is dumb.
Like, no, he was just squished. Like, I don't think he was dead because the rings came down on him.
Oh, was he just pinned?
He died.
Oh,
he was just pinned, okay. And then the rings, which I guess work like a microwave, and it's not just things contained from the bottom ring to the top ring. It's anything
right.
above and below the rings.
Yeah, they don't really explain it very well, but there's something visual about these big things that come down almost like electric, like there's a electric barrier between each ring and. They just come out and go, vun, 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 and they use it all through the show as well, and it's great. I love those rings.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're stupid and over the top. Maybe that's what I like about them.
And they invoke the trope called everything's better with spinning. Apparently, like, that's just how we are amazed. You know, like, remember in Contact when the way to go through the portal is to spin a bunch of stuff really fast.
Yeah.
We just like, we can't help ourselves. We're like, oh, this is high tech because it spins.
Because it spins.
Do you remember when Nog and Zod and what's her name were being judged? Yeah. They had spinny things around them in the court.
Yep. Yeah.
And then when they got put into the piece of glass that flew through space, that was spinning. Randy's onto something. Everything spins. Wow. Everything's better
everything's
when it's spinning.
Better with spinning. That's the name of the trope. Yep.
That's pretty good. Is that a real trope? Like a real documented? Oh my gosh.
Oh, is it really?
That's awesome.
Yeah, there's a bunch of examples. And sometimes it's not necessarily about how to make a gate look like technology, but it's just like, you know, in Star Wars movies, you're just like, you know, we've gotten to the point where we just don't know what to do with lightsabers anymore. I know, let's put them on a wheel and spin them around really fast, you know? Like that's where this trope ends up.
Yep. I think you're right. I love that. That's a great, and even just like the Stargate itself, like the fact that it has to rotate and lock in. There's something tactile about that. This is like ASMR for science fiction nerds, you know?
I do have to figure out how that works, because if the whole ring turns around and then you see it clamp onto a symbol, how does the ring keep turning around then?
Well, there's rings inside the rings.
Yeah, rings within rings.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. They show that
3D print this to be able to figure out what it is.
They show it better in the shows, I think, than they do in the movie. The movie was real brief with that stuff, but the movie did capture that very cool kind of dancing light, dark warehousey dancing light quality to when the ring is lit and everybody can get through it. It's just it's a very cool. I mean, it's just a door at the end of the day, but they make
the
a good
movie.
Door.
You say the movie was brief, but I want to be more specific. The movie is hand wavy. The movie doesn't want to explain it to you because it's kind of hard and weird to explain. So it's just like, just look over here at the reaction faces while we do this thing. You know, don't worry too much about the details.
Not so much. Not so important for to see really understand how it works.
I can't believe I'm going to start Stargate again. I'm starting it again. I'm going to watch it all before I watch The Orville. That's what's going to happen.
What?
I want to see it. I'm so into it.
You're gonna lose.
Well, what's on the top? We need to put something on the line. What do I lose if I lose? What do I? What's the?
Oh, jeez.
I'm telling you right now. As of the last month, you're missing out the best must-see TV that's current. Like that's what you're missing out.
Wow. All right. That's high praise. I'll have to. All right. I'll check it out then. I'm sure you're not overselling it. All right.
There's a downloadable working Stargate with Arduino control on Thingiverse that I can download and 3D print. I don't know what it means by working Stargate.
It probably rotates.
You're going to go to a different galaxy, Brian.
Yeah, but only my hand is going to fit through there. So it's just going to be like that first couple minutes with James Spader tickling the Stargate hole.
Yeah, but if it's scale, then that means on the other end, a giant hand from Ibbit will come through.
send through an old iPhone, but have Where's My iPhone loaded up on your current iPhone and see what happens.
Yeah.
Perfect. I love it.
Put your wiener through there. That's what I'm saying you should do. Put your wiener. Ween. Yeah, your ween ween. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's get to some clips here for the fine film Stargate, which is a movie. Let's see. We got, here we go.
I'm sorry. You can't just go from glory hole Stargate to this so fast, man. It was too fast.
Yeah, it was a little too fast. Although I also wasn't thinking full glory hole, but now that you've said it, that is exactly what we were doing. All right, here's that music you all know so well. It's just, to me, it's the TV show. That's all I hear.
YouTube strike.
Yeah, it's really good. Here's a terrible actor sneeze. These are some of my favorite things in movies when someone has to sneeze and it's a bad sneeze. Hate to tell you this, James Spader, not good at sneezing. Here you go. That's not a sneeze. Nobody goes.
No,
that's when you spit something out. That's not a sneeze. That's a spit take.
Not a sneeze at all.
Yeah, that's really bad. Say the name of your movie.
Stargate.
All right, thank you.
And pretty early on too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Set it right up front.
Stargate.
Stargate. Okay.
Stargate.
All right. Mm-hmm. Sound like the general from the TV show, and I'm not kidding. The general in this one has the voice of Don Davis from the TV show. Check it out.
So you think you've solved in 14 days what they couldn't solve in 2 years?
That's very weird to me. He sounds just like Don Davis. It's not the same actor, but really weird. That's only going to matter to people who have seen both. So Ibbit, F off. Just kidding. Here's Richard Kind saying a thing.
There's only 6 symbols in the cartouche.
Great.
Cartouche.
I can't take him seriously in a drama. I can't do it.
He likes to say things and then cartouche.
There's only 6 symbols in the cartouche.
He's just funny.
Cartouche.
Just standing there. He's funny. Here's what you got to do to your entrance.
Freeze and enhance.
Okay. Freeze and enhance your entrance.
Oh, man. You got to put a Trump alert on that.
Yeah, that one needs it.
Freeze and enhance.
There you go.
Did you see how much they enhanced too?
Like, oh, yeah.
An inordinate amount of enhancement happened.
Pretty good 1994 freeze and enhance technology going on there. Here's another sneeze, also very fake.
If anybody has anything to say, now's the time to say it.
Just not. Just don't buy it. It's not great.
No.
French Stewart makes himself known.
It doesn't work that way. You see, if you don't turn it on from here, we're screwed. Okay? So I'm telling you guys, we're not going anywhere.
I'm in the third rock from the sun.
It's almost like he's trying to channel the Festruck brothers from Saturday Night Live, you know, the wild and crazy guys. Oh, if you don't turn it on from here, it's not, not going to work.
Is that what those guys are called? What'd you call them?
The Festrunk brothers.
I never knew their names. That's crazy. You're smart. Make it go. Make our ship go.
Well, I'm in trivia mind mode for the next week.
Oh yeah, you got to think of all that.
A week
stuff.
From today, I won't even be able to remember my own name.
That'll be great. It'll be good podcasting that week. It'll be great.
Yes, right.
Here's what's this? I don't know what this is.
Me. Bunny Way.
Bunny Way.
Money way.
Which is money way.
That's Egyptian for Fifth Avenue Bar. He brought me a Fifth Avenue Bar.
Oh, yeah. I like that idea that he's already familiar with it. He's just out of them.
Any of the four of us ever had a Fifth Avenue Bar, by the way? Yes. I don't think I've ever had a Fifth Avenue
Bar. I've had one before. I like the mini ones.
They're pretty good.
Was it caramel, nougat, crunchy?
Yeah.
What's in there?
Kinda crunchy, they're not right? Memorable. It's kind of like a Butterfinger, right? Kind of Butterfinger-ish.
They're kind of like that, but they're less... butter, more finger.
Yeah, I don't think either of you have ever had one.
I've had one,
no,
but I don't
trust
know.
Trust me, I've had plenty.
I've had them. Yeah. They're not great. I don't remember them very well. They're not memorable.
Yep.
Oh, here we go.
I just looked it up. It's Hershey's answer to Butterfinger.
Okay. That's
peanut Hershey's butter crunch layers enrobed in chocolate.
Okay. Enrobed?
No wonder we've never had
That's
it.
That's what it says.
Butterfinger is perfect.
Enrobed isn't a word, is it?
Sure.
Enrobed in chocolate. I'm sitting in a robe right now. I'm enrobed in a robe. Great. All right.
Don't disrobe your chocolate.
No. I don't even know what that means, but a no, don't do it ever.
I like disrobing my chocolate. I like putting my Butterfingers or Fifth Avenue bars in the freezer and so the chocolate hards.
Wait, did you just say
you nibble off?
Did you just say you like to put your Butterfingers in your chocolate? Is that what you just said out loud?
That's right. Butterfingers in my freezer. I'm going to go with Butterfinger and chocolate too. That sounds good.
All right.
While we're here, double
dip.
What is the worst version of a candy that's clearly just a ripoff of the perfectly good candy made by the other manufacturer?
Mars bars and Milky Way. No,
it's the same company, isn't it?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe.
Milky Way is definitely not as good as Mars bar.
I like all candy.
I really like Milky Way.
I mean, UK Smarties are nowhere near as good as M&M's.
Whoops. Sorry.
But
that was supposed to play. Sorry.
Does anybody hate what's the Hershey version of the Heath bar? Heath is Nestle and Hershey has one called
the Hershey. Ah, Highway. Frick! I know what you mean, and it's not as good as the other one.
The only example I can totally come up with, it, and it's not really candy score. Bars, but it's candy. Oh, score. Yes, S-K-O-R. Twizzlers and Red Vines.
Oh, yeah, but
I like both of those two for different reasons.
Yeah, they're mine not. I don't think they're supposed to be copies of each other, right? They're
right.
Just
sure, it's red licorice.
Yeah,
and everybody has an opinion. Like, people are
Twizzlers
really strongly.
Twizzlers taste great. Red Vines are just borderline plastic.
I agree, right. But I think I don't think they're aiming for, there's nothing that's trying to copy anything here. They're just different kinds of licorice.
There's two red licorices that have different names, but yeah. Now, the one that always gets me whenever I find them in a pile of candy is, I always think Now or Laters are Starburst. I really like Starburst. Not a fan of Now or Laters. Now and Laters.
Are Now and Laters chewy? Are they chewy?
No, they're kind of harder. They're
okay.
Yeah, the Starbursts are chewy.
Yeah,
I think they make a chewy Now and Later too. But
this is a hard one, harder than I thought it would be to come up, because I know that these exist in perpetuity across all these candy companies. I just can't think of any. Like, does anyone make an equivalent to the Big Hunk? Or
that's just straight nougat, isn't it?
It's straight teeth removal tool, is what it is.
Right. Yeah,
that thing will pull your face apart. Oh my gosh, I lost a tooth to a big hunk.
Big hunk.
Sounds weird out of context.
Sorry. Big hunk.
Here are some video game cocks in this movie.
All right,
that's my new YouTube channel, the Video Game Cocks. Yeah. Come join us. The sound is straight out of video games, and they used it way too much. And also, cock your gun before you're getting stalked by a bunch of. Go old freaking henchman. So here it is. That is so it's cheap. It didn't even sound
it sounds
good
like the thing that's in our theme, in our film sack theme.
Oh, the
play that again.
Hold on.
It's because they always all guns, when you eject a freaking round, like.
I hate
that sound so much.
I hate it too. It's just over. It's just a video gamey sound, and it's like
reloading.
I did terrorist win. I expect to hear at the end of that from an old Counter-Strike.
I would like
game.
To know if there's a film or maybe even a TV show out there that is dedicated to using realistic sounds, which is to say, very few sounds around gun handling. That would be really interesting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in the old movies, we always talk about it on the show, but in older films. The shots themselves are also just reused stock stuff. Just same exact boom, boom, boom with every shot. And I hate that. I like good dynamic sound work, movie industry. Remember that. All right, here's some chicken sounds.
Bwah, 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 bwah.
Although bwah, bwah, bwah is not what he said.
Bwah, bwah. Did the Bluths just come in here?
Yeah, Chaka.
I watched that episode recently.
Oh, the Sleuth family.
Oh, yeah. Chaka. That's awesome.
They all do the chicken. They all do their chicken impressions.
We should do that. We should watch that Land of the Lost. That Land of the Lost TV show should be like one of our little quickie episodes. We should do one of those sometime.
Agreed.
All this Chaka talk has got me thinking.
Chaka talk.
Here's regards. Oh, this is a, you know, we do live in the era of not as, we're all out of good catch lines or
Catchphrases.
We're all out of them. But Kurt Russell still had one in 94 that I think holds up. So here it is.
Give my regards to King Tut, asshole.
Yeah, dude.
Wow.
Yeah. That'll put your butterfingers in your chocolate, if you know what I'm saying. All right.
Park that Fifth Avenue at the door, baby.
That's right. Check this out. This is a film tech checklist. Takes a lot of people to keep a giant monkey horse alive. Check. French Stewart's character should have gone halfway through the movie. Check. I freaking hated him. Have a hole in your gut. Just spend an hour in the healing sarcophagus. Check. Trek connections. We got a few here. More than you'd think. Scott Alan Smith was an officer in this. In Voyager, he played Doyle in the episode Repression. Leon Rippey was General W.O. West. He was the guy that sounds like Don, other guy. He played Lieutenant Colonel Sonny Clemens in the episode The Neutral Zone in 1988. And Frank Welker was the voice of Mustache. I don't know what that is. Who's Mustache? I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, provided, listed in there and didn't know which character that was.
But he provided Spock's screams in Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, and voiced... Oh. The Saito...
Mustad, you're talking about the voice of... So you're talking about...
I don't know.
Mustad, is that the...
The voice of Ra? I don't think so.
No.
What? The voice of what?
Wait a minute. I was thinking that was the name of the animal. Is that the name of the animal?
Oh, maybe. I don't know.
That was clearly Chewbacca.
It was clearly Chewbacca. Right.
Yeah, that was Chewbacca. Duh. Let's see. Search for Spock and also the cytoplasmic life form in the Star Trek Voyager episode Nothing Human. And then finally, Eric Avari, who we admire and like and see him in everything. He, of course, is in all kinds of Star Trek. He played the King Bijik in the episode Unification Part 1 on TNG. On DS9, he played Vadik Yarka in the episode Destiny. And on Enterprise, played Jenin in the episode Terra Nova. He is also, as Daryl puts it here, in every TV show ever made. All right. gets around. That guy's got a huge credits list in IMDb. Kicks butt over there. Soundtrack great. I give it a PA for pretty awesome. I think that guy killed it. It was real good across the board. Just a solid, great thing. And this made a lot of money, by the way, at the time. It was a big hit in 94. This movie was a surprise hit, I guess, according to everything I read. Let's get to the Twitter post. This is where you guys sum it up in 280 characters or less. Let's start with Randy Jordan.
Stargate. You go there and you feel trapped there. But then they give you a girl there, but you don't want the sex she's offering there, but then you do. Just like a Saturday night at Ipitac.
There.
Nice. Didn't see that coming. That was very good. Mm-hmm. I should see that coming every week.
I was ready for it. I was totally ready for it.
I was not ready for it. All right. Brian Dunaway.
Stargate, like an offer a soon-to-be homeless architect cannot refuse. I mean, what else are you going to watch on a Sunday morning? And hey,
at Ibbot's house. Oh.
Give my regards to King Tut, asshole.
Very well done. Finally, Brian Ibbot.
Stargate, brilliant sci-fi with compelling characters and an incredible universe. Oh, wait, I wrote this 2 weeks from now after I watched Stargate SG-1.
Nice. No.
All right,
nice.
There you go.
Very nice. Oh. Sorry to interrupt, guys. I was just handed this card. Apparently, these are the titles that were almost.
Did it come in through a Stargate?
Yeah, it just did. the water part reached out and touched my nose, and then I got this from it. It says this. The alternate title was almost Forbidden Finger Dirt Art, because everybody was always drawing stuff in the dirt and getting in trouble for it.
No.
And then finally, and now I really want to just think about this one for a second. It was almost called Watergate. Do you get it?
Mm. Not, Watergate.
Not because of like the Watergate controversy from the 70s, mm-hmm. but because... The gate looks like it's got water in it.
Water.
So Watergate, get it?
I like it.
Okay. Yeah. All right. we're not doing an email today. Instead, we're doing a phone call, which came into our voicemail line, which you can call anytime, listeners at home, 801-471-0462. If you'd still rather send email, filmsack@gmail.com. But here's a call about Watchmen, a recent episode we did. So here you go.
Hi, my name is David Pick. I'm calling in regards to FilmSec, specifically FilmSec 410 on Watchmen. I just share with Scott, Brian, and Randy that for preparation, I finally watched for the first time Watchmen the Ultimate Cut. And I have to say to Scott, if he liked the theatrical run, I think he's really going to like the Ultimate Cut if he gets the one watching it. One thing I thought I'd share. 2 years ago, I forgot I bought the graphic novel Watchmen, and I never read it. I'm going to take Scott's advice, and I am going to read the graphic novel. I look forward to future Film Sack, and hope everyone has a great time.
So,
Film Sack, convincing you to read.
Yeah. Yeah. I picked up the book again and started reading it again. Is that weird?
Not at all.
Okay. I got in the mood.
I don't know. How are you reading it? I mean, is there something to be concerned about it?
In bed, naked. No. Yeah, actually in bed. I have been reading it in bed, but it's great. It's still great, and I'm glad he's reading it. Everybody listening to this should read it. It's
really, really good. Definitely adds so much more to the movie, like having that background, that additional stuff to kind of fill in the cracks.
Yeah, it's extremely well written too. So Alan Moore's best work, perhaps. I think. I don't know. I'm a big fan of everything he does, but that one's something special. Thank you for the call. 801-471-0462 or email us filmsack@gmail.com. Now, okay, here's the deal. Brian Ibbett's going to be in Vegas next weekend. So whenever that sort of thing happens, the whole city shuts down. No, we usually try to do some short thing like a watch along or whatever, just to keep everybody good for the week and that sort of thing. And what we're going to try to do, if we can, is we're going to actually get an episode of SG1 in as a follow-up to today's show. The hard part is scheduling. I don't know if we're going to for sure have time. If we don't, then know that the reason there's no show next week is because we're taking it off because Brian's out of town. If that's the case, our next movie, after whatever we do, will be Skyline. And Skyline, Randy, remind me, is this Aaron Eckhart deal, right?
No.
Oh, what is it? I forget.
You're thinking about Starbucks.
Starbucks.
Starbucks. No, what is it?
Aaron Eckhart, always getting a Venti Latte. Oh, Starbucks. In the 25th
Buck Rogers. Buck Rogers.
Yeah. Starbucks.
No, let me just, I just want to, this is from 2010. The description goes, after a wild night of partying, Terry discovers that he's one of the few people left on Earth, then sets out to solve the mystery of what happened. A lot of younger actors, some that you might have heard of from other things, but it actually spawned a sequel already. And so we have to watch the first one and find out why.
Okay. Mm. Oh, yeah. Look at that.
Second. So main character or main actor, Eric Balfour, who always should play the devil.
Yeah. Yes.
And Donald Faison from Scrubs.
Oh. Oh, all right.
Like him.
Oh, yeah. This Eric Balfour when he was having a moment. Yep. This. Okay. With the mustache. All right. Mm-hmm. He's not doing shit now. So we're going to honor him.
He's biding his time until they finally do a Frank Zappa biopic, and
he'd be perfect.
Then he's a shoo-in.
Yeah, he'd be perfect for that. I guess he does have some stuff going, but I haven't heard of any of it. Like, none of this. There's like some TV stuff and then a movie called Bright in a Hollow Sky and Manson Girls. Oh, I bet that's that. You know what that'll be? That'll be like those, whenever there's a movie that kind of mirrors another movie, Tarantino's got his Charlie Manson movie coming out, and then this thing will be like the Transmorphers.
Right.
Yeah.
Companion film kind of thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It'll be deep.
Transmorphers.
Yeah. It'll be deep impact to their Armageddon.
Right. Right.
We'll see. Anyway, there's that.
And by the way, we're recording this just before the Oscars. You're probably listening to it after you already know what happened, but we don't yet. Anybody have any idea of a film that can stop Roma?
I think Green Book. I'm going to say Green Book beats Roma tonight for Best Picture. And I'm also going to say, on iTunes, if you spend $10, you can download the entire collection of short live action short films, as well as three of the animated films, because I guess Disney didn't want to give up Bao for this. It's a $10 well spent, but let me tell you this, there is no light, fluffy live action short this year. Every year there seems like there's one that's got kind of a light, fluffy feel. If you're the parent of a small child, I don't think you want to watch any of them.
Wow. Agreed. Totally agreed. And by the way, Bao has to win that category, right? Like, it's just amazing.
Oh, it totally. I wasn't, as far as like little pre-Pixar animated films, I don't think Bao is anywhere near as good as any of the other ones. But I think for me, actually, what is it? Not Weekends. Is it Weekends? the animated short weekends, mm-hmm. I think I might have liked better than... Oh, no, no, no. It's the One Small Step, I think, has a chance of being beating Bao.
All right. I'll give you that. I just... I think probably the biggest question about the Oscars is do they give Spike Lee Best Director or does it go to Cuarón? And then we all feel weird about Spike Lee having been nominated and not winning.
Has he still never won one? He's been nominated multiple times, but never won one.
Is that his name? He's only been nominated once before.
Was Do the Right Thing.
So this is like supposed to be a redemption, but I don't know.
Maybe the Academy will do the right thing.
No. sounds like somebody's elevators here though, so probably
right,
someone's fries are
well
done.
It's my stupid neighbor kids who always come over and won't take don't answer the door for an answer. They'll knock on the door and knock on the door and knock on the door for 15 minutes, and when that doesn't work, they start ringing the doorbell.
Southern kids, dude. Oh, I've been there. That's what you're getting. You're getting a big taste of that. Well, all right then. Well, one way or the other, Skyline is a target. And next week we'll know who won, or whenever we meet again, we'll know who won.
We already know Glenn Close is winning Best Actress. We don't have to wait until.
Do we know that? Do we know that for sure? This is one of those.
I think that's the biggest lock. I don't know if Ibbitt agrees. Like,
it is
Rami Malek.
He's due. Yeah, Rami Malek for Bohemian Rhapsody. I don't know.
Is close to a lock. I don't know either. Here's an interesting one. Best Adapted Screenplay has felt like it's going to be A Star Is Born for the entirety of Oscar season. Mm-hmm. And like that actually leads me to think maybe not. Maybe they're going to give it to Black K Klansman.
Yeah. Maybe.
I don't know.
Black K Klansman.
Yeah. I don't know how to. Black, how you? How do you? I'm looking forward to watching the Oscars to find out how they say that name.
Yeah,
they will say Black Klansman.
Yeah, Black kick. You ought to know by now. Yeah, like that. It'll be like that song. All right. Well, we'll tune in and find out there at CBS, wherever the hell it is. I don't know what's on. I'm not giving them a pimp. I have no idea.
It's on ABC every year. ABC.
Yeah, well done.
Like if you go to like. abc.com or oscar.com, it's ABC is everywhere.
All right, well, I hope they stream it because I'm gonna be somewhere where I won't be able to watch it on a TV. Yeah. Probably not.
Tomorrow you can just watch the highlights.
I may do that. Brian's the one that goes all in on this. I'll let him soak it up.
Yep. We have a party every year where we have friends over and do the Oscar predictions and prizes and great meal and all that stuff.
Again, maybe we get this episode out and people are listening to it right before the Oscars. Mm-hmm. Go to oscar.com/game. There, like, there's this $50,000 grand prize drawing happening on their official game, and it's going to be running like concurrently with the Oscars. So you're not going to be in advance. You're going to be watching the show and doing their game at the same time. Like, do that. It looks like it's going to be really fun.
I wonder if it's going to be more than just predict the winner of this category. If it's going to be like, is Seth Rogen going to screw up his lines for this intro?
Yeah. Brian, it's going to include trivia questions.
Yeah.
All right. All right. I'm in.
I like everything you're saying. I like everything you're saying. All right. Well, that's going to do it for us. Thank you all for listening. Filmsack.com is our website. You can leave your comments on the blog. I'm seeing more of that lately, and that's nice. So if you have thoughts and feelings, it's just a little free thing. Go over there and put your name in, and boom, you had a comment. That would be awesome. If you'd like to leave us a voicemail, 801-471-0462. You can email us, filmsack@gmail.com, and you can find us on Twitter @FilmSack. That's going to do it for us. For me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Bwah, bwah.
Damn it, Kowalski.
We'll see you next see you next time. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.
Bwah, 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 bwah.